Welcome on to a special live edition of the Dunked On Basketball podcast. Some awesome hotel room podcasting, which will no doubt lead to an even more awesome reduction in our normally awesome audio quality. Joined by Seth Partno, live here, and Danny LaRue. What's up, guys?
How's it going? This is very intimate.
nothing to be scared about with a little intimacy, Seth.
That's not what our listeners wanted to hear to start their days. But yeah, so we're all in Summer League here in Vegas. A lot of signings have happened, so let's get right into it here. Just came down from Keith Pompey, and I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing his name. I'm not as up on the pronunciation of my classic Roman names as perhaps I should be. But he is reporting that Joel Embiid is going to have a second surgery on the navicular bone in his right foot, which is basically what had him miss all of last year. And that, you know, it would be assumed that if he does have that, they'll be equally as conservative and he'll probably miss all of next year as well.
Yeah, that's certainly what it looks like. And it makes the drafting of Okafor make a lot more sense, even though they're probably going best player available. But if they had kind of some indications that this was happening, then there's no need to not draft a guy just because a guy who's not going to play is going to fill his position.
Well, so let's say that, you know, these reports are true. He does, in fact, miss a whole nother season. Like, what does that mean for his outlook going forward?
None of us are medical doctors, so it's speculation. But enormous human beings with foot problems isn't exactly a subset with a lot of success. I mean, we, you know, from Bill Walton to Sam Bowie to, I mean, Brooke Lopez is kind of...
Yao is another one had the same injury.
And I mean, there is a positive, like, Zydrunas Ilgauskas has had some real big trouble early in his career, and he ended up having a pretty long run of it, but the track record isn't that strong, and that's always sad because he's still a phenomenal talent. I mean, I think all three of us were high on him as a draft prospect, and, you know, if he can get to even maybe not even 100%, but if he can get to 90, but, you know, we have to see if he can actually get there.
Yeah, I mean, and the guys who have come back from this too, that's mostly the guys like Ilgauskas, Brooke Lopez, who looked good coming back. Those are the guys who had like the fifth metatarsal injury. Like, that's not the navicular bone is basically, it's sort of like, you know, where your big toe and your foot comes together. Like, that's where you're pushing off with everything. And really, if you're having problems there, and it's such a delicate bone with such little blood flow from everything that I've read, that it's a real issue. I mean, and let's say even now, let's say he somehow gets through this again, and he miraculously never has any trouble the rest of his career. A lot of his upside was based on the fact that you improve. You know, and he was already kind of a year old for a freshman, so he'll really be, you know, 22, 23 by the time he was able to make his debut. And you now basically missed out on 2 years of development time, and he was already considered somewhat more of a raw guy anyway. So it's got, I mean, I think at this point, if you're the Sixers, you basically have to just proceed in all respects as if he's just not going to be a part of the team.
And what really hurts in some ways with that is also, I would guess that his trade value for the rest of his career is probably depressed, because even if it goes well, teams are always going to be reticent because they know the history.
And you consider this too, he's now, this will be 2 years of his rookie contract, his cheap rookie contract that they've forfeited. And so even if he does have a good year, you know, which will be the third year of his rookie contract, then it's already time for an extension with him, you know, and so that's another issue too. Really, it's a shame for Embiid. Maybe a little bit less so, you could say, from the Sixers, because this is sort of a calculated risk, and it's all a numbers game in Philly. But when you consider that, this is one of their bets that didn't pay off.
I take slight issue with that. Yes, they took a gamble, but, you know, injuries can happen to any player, and people are going to say, well, that was a dumb pick they made. They should have done something safe.
Yeah, I'm not saying that at all.
No, okay. I think we're all saying
that it's, you know, this was a potential outcome of what happened. I would have gone with Dante Exum in that particular situation there. I thought that he was, at the time I said that, I probably might have even gone with Smart as well. But, you know, we'll see how those guys turn out. You have no idea whether they're going to be anything or not yet. So, But yeah, I mean, I understand why they did what they did. They went for the guys with the most upside. That's both on a player sense and a franchise sense. That's what this rebuild has been all about. And it's looking like it didn't work out this time, which is a real shame.
I am obviously disappointed in this, but we do get to see a really solid sample size now of whether Noel and Okafor can play together at this stage in their career. I'm intrigued by that.
Yeah. All right. Hey, and you guys got anything else on that one? You know, other than just like utter and complete depression.
Yeah. I mean, that's really what it is.
The broader point is that kind of the floor is always lower than you think it. Even these can't miss prospects, and you know, this was a red flag going in, but really anybody could break their foot tomorrow, and then this. So whether it's, you know, injuries or just not as good as you thought, no one's a sure thing, and it's just another reminder of that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, I did this list, which I'll probably do again this year if I ever actually start writing again, of the top 10 prospects 23 and under in the NBA like last November or so, and I always picked the guys who actually were closer to already being stars, because there's so many things that can derail you. Even if you look great in college, even if you look great your rookie year, you know, there's just the further out and further away you are from being a star, the further you are just from in a temporal standpoint from reaching your prime, there's always stuff that can derail you, and that has to be priced into player evaluation at all times.
It really does. So we can move on. The other kind of notable story of the last couple days is with Deron Williams. Deron Williams, he agreed to a buyout with the Nets. He's going to get $27.5 million from his contract. That's more than half, but not a ton more than half. Then the Nets are using the stretch provision on him, so that's going to spread it out. We can talk a little bit about that. And right after that, he agreed to a two-year, $10 million contract with the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah, so he, and for those who haven't listened to previous shows, the way the stretch provision works is as long as you do it before September 1st, stretch someone and release them, basically, you are allowed to spread their contract over twice the number of years remaining on their contract, plus one. He had 2 years left, so that's 5 years that they're spreading that $27.5 million over. But the big consequence here is that they are actually able to get under the tax now for this year, and they'll be able to hopefully avoid the repeater tax. And that was huge for Brooklyn. Also might mean that, you know, Joe Johnson, I think, will be likely staying put at least for a while.
Yeah, it definitely gives them, if you want to call it, leverage in negotiations with him, because they have no urgency anymore. I had been of the mind, just because my thought with Brooklyn is it's more about 2016 and 17 than this year, that if they were to get to an agreement with him about that number, I would have considered trying to do, okay, can we convince you to decline your player option, and then we'll do it that way and just take the hit this year. But at the same point, if it's only going to be about $5 million on the cap, that's not so prohibitive that it will prevent them from really doing anything.
Well, and it's going to just save them like $50 million.
Oh, yeah.
Probably, like more than that even. Well, so, Seth, I mean, Brooklyn doesn't have their pick next year. They just lost, at least by most advanced metrics, the only guy on their roster who can play point guard with any kind of proficiency. How good are they going to be next year now?
Pretty not good. You know, the issue is it's the Eastern Conference, and they still have Brook Lopez, who, if he's healthy, yada, 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 things go right, you could win 38 games and slip into the eighth seed. So, I don't know. They're not going to bottom out, because they have enough guys who can soak possessions at kind of professional level that they could be, like, okay is probably too high, but... not disastrous. Yeah. You know, kind of that dead zone area that teams don't like to be in, but in their case, that's probably where they were anyway. And, you know, it's worth probably, as you said, $50 million to not maybe rise a blip above that. I can buy that.
I mean, the only thing it costs them is potential embarrassment, right? I mean, like, you know, this team, maybe they could sneak into the eighth seed. And all right, you know, they made these moves with Boston. Boston has their unprotected 2016 pick. You know, Danny, we talked about this a little bit too. You know, this is really interesting for Boston fans. We'll get to Dallas a little more, but you know, taking Deron Williams off of Brooklyn this year and putting him on Dallas, they have the top 7 unprotected pick from Dallas this year also, the Celtics do. Are you happy about this move if you're a Celtics fan?
If you really like picks in the low teens, you are. But for me, the what it does is it raises Dallas's floor and it kind of kneecaps Brooklyn's ceiling. And so I'm somebody who believes that those picks kind of in the, let's say, 8 to 14 range are nice but not super valuable. You're basically praying that somebody falls to you. They're hard to use as a trade asset because a lot of times if you want to try to get into, like, let's say the top 5 or so, teams are going to love that. If you want to kind of accumulate them to get somebody else, like maybe a certain Mercurial center in Sacramento, maybe they value it a little bit more. But I find that those picks, I actually wrote a piece for Real GM a couple days ago about how I don't love those assets as a personal, like as a personal preference. So I think it kind of hurts them in that way because they were never going to, like, basically now, I don't think Brooklyn's going to fall off the map. I don't think they're going to, you know, fall to like 6 or something like that. So it'll be all right, not devastating, but it definitely means they'll probably have 2 lottery picks from that. But it does also open up a clear path for them for the playoffs next year, which weakens their own pick again.
Yeah, you know, I think it's good for them. This is because it the Dallas pick, the way it kind of was trending in Dallas, and you know, maybe they would have avoided this fate anyway, but it was trending to where they were going to be in the top 7. And then next, you know, Dallas is going to have a ton of space again next year. You know, presumably they could be a little bit better next year. Maybe not, though. I don't know. So, I mean, that's one way to look at it, that you're getting the Dallas pick now this year. Probably still be a lottery pick. Might not be a lottery pick in future years. And also just, there's always a discount for getting a pick now as opposed to later.
Yeah, personally.
You know, it's always better to get it now. And then Brooklyn, I mean, their issue, too, now is if Brook Lopez goes down again, they are just going to be horrendous, and they could still even be pretty horrendous. So that's I think anything that weakens Brooklyn, that weakens the unprotected pick, it's all about the way the draft pick structure is. There's such a premium on those top 3 picks or so that this greatly increases their chance of getting a top 3 pick, and that's why I happen to like it. What do you think, Seth?
I very much agree with that analysis.
And yeah, you know, I said that because you were nodding your head, so I was like, oh yeah, this is a good time to ask you what he thinks.
No, and it puts the parlay in play that, you know, they somehow end up with like the 1-8 and 15 or something like that, which is, who was it this year that had, was it the Sixers?
Sixers.
This year had the chance that if everything broke right, they could have just this.
Yeah,
this,
1-6-11 was like the, whatever one was,
and
so far.
And something like that is in, you know, is in play for the Celtics this year. And that's, you know, and, you know, 15 is maybe optimistic for them too. So they, now judging on this year's draft, whether that's a good thing, you know, the Celtics didn't do great if you ask me, but nobody did. So yeah, no. As kind of a lingering Celtics fan, I'm very pleased with this development, and it's more bullets for Danny to fire. It's just a matter of this time whether he can get someone to take his money, which he couldn't get. He couldn't get Charlotte to do in this year's draft, if reports are to believe.
Do we want to move on to Dallas?
Yeah. So this is my question now is, and we can start with this, is they just got Deron Williams on a 2-year, $10 million deal. In a vacuum, that's not terrible, is it?
No, it's solid. I mean,
he's still a starting level point guard.
And they didn't have a starting level point guard. So the way I was thinking about it yesterday is that this is kind of a pretty solid silver lining for Dallas if you assume that one of their goals was being relevant this year. Like, they have, between this and Zaza Pachulia, which we'll talk about in a little bit, they have dramatically improved the, like, worst case scenarios for their team. However, you can make an argument that because of the top 7 protection on their pick, that if they could have tried to, if they were willing to tolerate living in that range, that might have made their overall asset pool, you know, in a year or two better. But if that wasn't a realistic option, then getting guys like Deron Williams is a good move, especially at that cheap a price.
The problem for them is that just from an overall franchise goals standpoint, they're like stuck in this interdimensional netherworld now, right? Like, you know, because Mark Cuban talked about it, you know, basically in his moment of, we can call it clarity, even though it appeared he might have been a little bit inebriated when he was celebrating the DeAndre thing, and went on the radio saying, all right, if we hadn't gotten him, we really would have had to take a step back this year. That's what they should have done, right? They have a top seven protected pick. They need a lot more talent. But, oh yeah, franchise icon Dirk Nowitzki took a three-year, $25 million deal into the sunset of his career so you could build a competitor around him, and he doesn't want to be miserable for a year when he's 37. He wants to at least, like, play in basketball games that could potentially mean something. But now I think that long-term, their franchise is going to be much worse off by not having done exactly what Cuban kind of said that they should have in, you know, perhaps that moment of honesty.
Are we jumping the gun a little bit? Doesn't Darren Williams need to clear waivers first? Okay.
I think actually there is no team that could have claimed him at this point. Because Portland's space is tied up with Cantor.
With Cantor, that's right. The other point with that is how hard it is organizationally to be willing to accept that kind of worst case scenario. I think what we've seen with this, it shows how anomalous what the Sixers have done is that they
Sacramento is another one. Exactly. They just can't do it, right?
They're not willing to, the Knicks, the Lakers, like the Lakers tried, I mean, they magnificently failed, but they tried to push themselves out of that group for a year. I mean, they ended up kind of getting the best case scenario because they didn't put anything bad on their books and they just were terrible anyway. But teams.
Yeah, I mean, even Orlando, you know, they signed Channing Frye last year. Yeah. You know, like, I mean, I think that there's an impatience level there now as well. You know, they signed C.J. Watts. I mean, that's why you admire the Sixers' plan so much. They have a plan, and they're sticking to it, even if, you know, they've had some setbacks, like with Embiid.
What about the Nuggets? Like, I don't know how they fit into this, because it seems like they're just sitting there primed to dump Gallinari, Chandler, they could do that and just really bottom out, but at the same time, they're holding all those cards still.
You know what's a little interesting about them? I just realized this, right? What did they give up to dump McGee? You remember?
It was a late first, I believe. It was the OKC first rounder,
which is pretty heavily protected. I think it's lottery protected, but it looks like they're just never going to use that space, right? Like, this would have been the last year of McGee's contract. He was making about, like, $12 million. They have $10 million in space, basically the space that they got from dumping him. They haven't used that at all. I mean, maybe they will to get another dumping ground and pick up something else, but is that going to be as good as the pick that they gave up to dump McGee to begin with? Probably not, you know? So that was something that kind of low-key people haven't been talking about, that, yeah, I like what Denver has done overall. Getting Moutier was great. He looked great yesterday, as we all saw, for at least a quarter before we went over to the other game. But, yeah, I think that move is low-key is kind of not really that great, ultimately.
And it looks unlikely that they're – because they could also do it with a trade exception, but that's functionally the same space. But, yeah, it's the same issue.
Yeah, so Seth, I mean, the other thing, though, that we haven't talked about yet is Wes Matthews is now getting $70 million instead of $57 million.
Yeah, that's in. I always feel bad criticizing that contract because I think we all agree we love Wes Matthews as a player. But the problem is the Wes Matthews we love, that's the likelihood that we're ever going to see him again at that level. It just, you know, based on any sort of history with the Achilles injury, we've basically never seen it. The only instance is like Dominic Wilkins, who was never a defender anyway, and that's a big part of Wes's kind of value as a player. So that's a worrisome contract. That's a long time to pay a guy who maybe just can't play anymore because we don't know yet.
Well, what do you think of the process there, though, between this idea that he was given 4 for $57 million? I said 4 for $47 million. I think that was just a typo that someone had written on Twitter last time, so we'll correct that. It was 4 for $57 million initially. But this idea that if then Jordan didn't sign, it would go up for 4 for $70 million. Like, what do you think of that process behind doing that?
In general, I think that's perfectly reasonable. This particular player, even having that 470 out there is super risky. Even the was it 57 or 53?
I think 57 was the last that I saw. I mean, you know, it was never hard committed to, right. So maybe there were some different figures.
But we had a deal.
The reason...
wait, we had a deal!
The reason that you would do that is if you were really confident that you were going to get DeAndre Jordan. Because if you do... Basically, if you don't think that the 470 is really on the table and you're doing it more in the way of an inducement... then let's say it's 90-10, then you do that. But the problem is it ended up in the 10. You know, it ended up in the DeAndre Jordan didn't come camp. And so they might have overestimated, you know, his commitment level in that sense. Basically, if they said they interpreted their question of if Wes Matthews comes, will you come? If he said yes to that, they interpreted that as a hard yes as opposed to a mostly hard yes.
Yeah, well, and maybe that was, I don't know if they did it quite that way, but I think they just had to look at it as, look, we have to get something else here. And so if we can get Matthews in, then we have a good chance of getting Jordan. I mean, that's exactly what you said. I think they did it that way as an inducement to get Jordan and just were okay living with the downside. Because they just had to get somebody to sign up first. So that was, and you know, maybe it would have been better if those guys had talked to one another a little bit more. Maybe they did. Who knows? But yeah, I mean, that's going to be one of the worst contracts in the NBA, I think, pretty likely.
I think, again, if it's Danny Green you're talking to about this, then it perfect sense. All right, this is the downside. Maybe slightly above the odds for Danny Green, but perfect, fine. But it just the fact that it's a guy coming back from one of, like, as we've talked about, kind of the most career devastating injury, like reasonably common injury,
except for the navicular bone.
Yeah. Fair enough.
yeah, but at least but the navicular bone guys, at least when they do come back, they've come back pretty well, at least for a time until they re-injure themselves. Whereas with this, you know, the Achilles, your explosiveness is really good. I mean, you know, not a lot of people re-injure their Achilles necessarily. It's just that they're not as explosive. And I do also think there's a possibility that they could be really terrible next year as well. I mean, because they don't really have anybody on the wing except for Parsons and Matthews. Parsons had this shadowy surgery. I mean, you know, he still refuses to say what it was. There was speculation it could be microfracture. If there is that speculation, and then you won't say what it was, maybe it was microfracture. So that's not great for him. And then there's Wes too. I mean, and now are they going to take their time really with those guys? If they do, you know, it's going to be Richard Jefferson like starting on the wing. So they could very much still fall into that top seven. I think if they have as terrible a start as they could with those guys out, maybe they will finally be able to kind of get Dirk on board with that. What about the Pachulia trade, Danny? Like that was, I thought that was actually, you know, and both that and the Williams moves are good moves. You know, if you're in a vacuum, I want to improve my team. Like those guys, those are both good contracts.
Certainly, I mean Pachulia, he's about a little over $5 million. He's an expiring deal, so he doesn't tie up anything in terms of their future wonderful dream assets. And they got him for nothing. I mean, they got him for a pick that, from what I can see, is protected 31 to 55, which means if they're in the top five, they said it in 2018. If so, I think it's 2018 protected. So if they're in the top five, then I think, sure, they'd be happy to give it away. It is a part of what has been one of the more bizarre off seasons that I can think of. And so I was thinking about this. I was talking about it with some people in the media at Summer League. And other than the Sixers-Kings trade, which was, to me, the worst trade of the offseason, you can make an argument that since when the finals ended, the three worst trades that have happened were all committed by the Milwaukee Bucks, and that's the Grievous Vasquez dumping a first-round pick for an expiring contract, giving away Jared Dudley, and giving away Zaza Pachulia. And yet they still have had a pretty solid offseason. It's so weird.
Yeah, like, what are they doing with this money? Five, that's going to be better than those guys. I mean, at the very least, try and trade him during the season to, like, a contender. I mean, if you can't get something back, like, why give up an asset? I mean, they have two centers on the roster in Monroe and Henson, but, you know, Henson has had some injury concerns before. You know, neither of those guys is necessarily, like, you know, a great traditional center-type defensive option. Pachulia played well. Jared Dudley was great on their second unit. Like, I really just don't get it all. I mean, and then you help out your competition, Washington. You know, those teams finished one seed apart from each other next year. Like, why help out Washington just to get $5 million in room that you're not going to use at all? Like, it makes no sense to me.
Like, if they were going to get Allen Anderson and that was their only upgrade because they got him for $4 million, if they were going to do that and they didn't get Jared Dudley, I would be thinking about that team somewhat differently than I am now. And also, the flexibility they're getting seems like it's not going to really yield anything. You know, they're getting they're getting some cap space now. It's not like they're shedding luxury tax money or anything like that where you can see an extra financial pressure like the David Lee trade. They're just dumping these guys at a time that gives them an asset they're not going to use, and they got nothing for them.
Yeah, I mean, they might be able to execute those transactions when they're over the cap so that they could get two trade exceptions. But those might be of use later. But, yeah, I just don't really get it.
If you're looking for an upside of these trades, and I agree with everything you guys have said, kind of the other side of that is you're kind of looking solely almost in the cap financial impact of it. And on the court, I mean, if these are basically deals that are clearing playing time, clearing shots, for Jabari Parker coming back, for Greg Monroe getting all those minutes. And yes, it's giving assets away, but at the same time, if these are going to be guys who are somehow beholden to play, and you'd rather get those minutes to, making sure Giannis gets minutes at the four, making sure Jabari gets all the playing time he can handle, developing some of the other young guys who might not have played had Pachulia and Dudley been there. And I still agree with you on balance, but I think that the other side of that, what they are getting out of this, has to be said. And yes, you could, just don't play those guys, but then you've basically given the asset away anyway.
I don't know. I think they needed Dudley.
Yeah, I like it. But
Pachulia, I agree with you a little more.
Yeah.
Well, and the issue of leverage, too. I mean, Dallas was in a situation where the market for guys of that caliber was really low, and they extracted nothing from them. That's always frustrating for me when teams give away assets that they don't have to do. The Wizards desperately needed a Jared Dudley, and they had a trade exception that didn't fit a ton of guys. I mean, to me, even if you want to give away those guys, just squeeze a little harder. I mean, it's impossible to squeeze less hard than a top everything protected pick from the Mavericks in 3 years.
Well, I don't know. The Reggie Jackson contract felt like something that was not much of a squeeze either. But I get you. And that's a big part of why I think all of us didn't like that contract, is it seemed like unnecessary.
Absolutely. Well, would Stan Van Gundy give you back a real second rounder for Jared Dudley? I feel like there are a lot of teams that would have done it. If I'm running a team, I would do that.
Absolutely, I would.
And then you have his rights for next year. I mean, not that you really want to go much over what he was making this year by then with him being 31. But nonetheless, all right. Should we move on to Danny's? Actually, this has got to be your favorite contract of the offseason, right?
Oh, sweet Christ. It really might be. So, Enes Kanter Portland signed Enes Kanter to a max offer sheet. And,
Seth may have actually just injured his head.
I like that we're both on because
own,
I think...
with his own hand.
There was actually a discussion about this because people were sending Seth things on Twitter about, you must hate this. And I was kind of sitting there knowing that we were going to be together. And you're like, we might be the two people in this city who hate this move the most.
That's a high bar to clear based from talking to people yesterday. There is scratching of heads about this move. I'll say that. I was getting a lot of pushback on Twitter for stuff I was saying about like the Reggie Jackson contract. And basically at the time I was like, the one thing I'll say about it is I'm going to hate the contract. Enes Kanter gets more, and he got even a little more than I almost expected him to. And he's not good.
I got two questions for you guys. The first one is, he's 23 years old. What do you think the chances are that he can improve defensively, given his age? And are his physical tools just that terrible that's just not possible in your opinion?
It's not just that he needs to improve; it's how much he needs to improve. He would have to improve to be where Amari Stoudemire was defensively in Phoenix. I'll put it that way. And that was a pretty bad defender. But it's not like Greg Monroe is a not great defender. But the difference between Greg Monroe and Enes Kanter on defense is livable versus disastrous to your team defense.
Well, we talk about this all the time, but we haven't been on the air really enough to talk about him since he was out of the playoffs. I mean, what is it that makes him so bad defensively?
You want to talk about transition defense, Seth?
Well, it's if he's slow and inattentive, I think are kind of like, and slow, I mean he's physically not rapid, and also he there's guys who've gotten away with being not particularly fleet of foot by smart positioning and reading the game in anticipation, and he doesn't do that either. So, and as Danny has said, there's any number of indications that he might be the single worst transition defender in the NBA.
Well, I don't think he actually is that slow running in a straight line for a center, which is what he's going to be playing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he is that slow if you just told him to sprint down the court at his absolute maximum speed. You know, I don't think he's that slow. Like, I think that the transition D, and I am playing devil's advocate a little bit here. I mean, I obviously think that that's an overpay. I do think for a 23-year-old, it's more defensible
sure.
than it is, you know, for Wes Matthews. I think because it's a better contract than the Matthews contract, just for that reason. Because, like, I think that there is a way. I don't think his physical tools are that terrible. Like, I don't think that, like, you know, I think it's possible that he could improve to being, you know, just, like, slightly below average with the right coaching, with better transition defense. You know, he's a decent rebounder, at least, you know, to where he's just, I think he could get to the point where he's not going to kill you, and he could be, a pretty good offensive force. So it's, you know, certainly an overpay. Don't get me wrong. I would not be happy about paying this much for him. I don't think he's even as good as, like, Steven Adams right now. You know, I think he should absolutely lose a lot of playing time, especially when you look at the other offensive talent that they have on that team. In Oklahoma City, I don't understand the move from the standpoint of, like, all right, they wanted to get younger guys, but, you know, getting two guys who love shooting and don't do much else, you know, I guess Gander rebounds as well, Waiters being the other guy I'm talking about at the trade deadline. That never made sense to me. I feel you on all of that, but I do think there is at least a way in which, with the cap going up, that he could potentially live up to this contract someday.
There certainly is, and part of what makes Kanter so frustrating to me is that he could be much better than he is. And so you can think about those players in two directions. You can think about it in the direction of, oh, well, yeah, they have this upside that's being unrealized, and then you have the other part that's, well, they aren't doing that. And so there's a line between frustration and terribleness that I think is kind of important here, and that frustration comes from him potentially being better than he has been. And the offensive point is a huge thing with the Thunder because they're not focusing on improving their weaknesses. And so they got a guy in Deion Waiters who takes shots away from guys who you never want to ever take shots away from. I mean, people used to rip Russ for that, but Russ is way, way, way better than Deion Waiters.
So my second question for you guys is this just a total troll move by Portland signing him to this?
It really depends on... This is actually a test for Sam Presti. I don't think he should match. Now, but the problem with that is it's a political problem almost as much as it is a basketball problem.
Yeah, I mean, you don't make the trade for him to begin with if you weren't willing to match this contract, right? Like, he you know that Utah wasn't able to sign him to an extension. You know that he has a $7 million qualifying offer for this year, so has a lot more willingness than most restricted free agents to just take a 1 year qualifying offer. So you know when you make this trade for him, you're gonna have to pay him $13.5 million a year minimum probably, and you know go into the tax, and we'll get to those implications in a second. I think at this point, you know, you're pretty much like pot committed. You know, for another $2.5 million a year, you blew a first round pick on this guy. Like, and also it just makes you the optics of we were too cheap to match for Kevin Durant. You know, that's no good either. And not only were we too cheap to match, we also blew a first round pick for the privilege of being too cheap to match. Like, that's you can't not match at this point, I think.
No, that's why it's a political problem, because basically, if you want to not match, you have to convince. You have to convince Kevin Durant that you're doing it for basketball reasons. Just like, not only do we not want to pay this guy this much, we want to give his minutes to Serge Ibaka, Steven Adams, Mitch McGarry, because they're much better players.
Yeah, and if playing Kanter leads to less Ibaka at the 5, which it will, less Durant at the 4, which it will, it could definitely make them a worse team this year, although, you know, I would imagine that KD's minutes are going to be, you know, 31, 32 minutes a game, you would hope, this year with him coming back. But, yeah, I definitely understand that, but it's, I mean, so what's the opportunity cost of this now? I mean, talk about what the luxury tax situation is first, Danny. Like, let's give a little background.
Sure. So if they match on Kanter, my numbers have it that they'll have a little over $99 million in salary, and that would put them at about $14.5 million over the luxury tax line. Based on those numbers, my estimates are that the luxury tax payment that they would have would be $27 million. So that would be $27 million on top of the $99 million. So that's a pretty hefty payroll. If they decide to stretch Steve Novak from there, which they could do to, as we talked about before, to put over 3 years.
He makes $3.7 million, is that right?
Yeah. So just stretching him would save them $6.25 million in tax payments. So that's substantial, but they still would have plenty of obligation for that group of guys, and it would also start to hamstring them in terms of next summer, because if they retain Kevin Durant, they would be pushing up against the tax, I believe, for the following year.
But they also have Perry Jones, who is, you know, in his fourth year, his rookie contract now. What does he make? He's making like $3 million or so.
That sounds about right. Maybe, yeah, about that.
Yeah, so, you know, I think they could find a taker for him. There's going to be a ton of teams that haven't spent up to the cap. You know, at the very least, you can get off of him, I'm sure, for a second-round pick.
To Milwaukee?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so, I mean, they have a complicated situation there, but and one thing to also remember is that you don't figure out the luxury tax bill at the beginning of the year, you figure it out at the end of the year, so they could make moves over the course of the season through various things, whether that be moving players into trade exceptions or whatever. They don't have to make those commitments now, though, as we've seen with certain situations this summer, for larger contracts, the amount of options you have. Also, if they match on Enes Kanter, they can't trade him for a year without his consent.
Yeah, no, that's true too. And we should also, when you say the end of the year, that's as of the last day of the regular season. Just to be clear on that, I know you know that.
Thank you for clarifying, for listeners.
Is there really any opportunity cost here from matching? You know, I think, you know, if they re-sign Durant, it'll be a cap team again next year. They'll be over the cap next year.
I don't have the hard numbers on it, but it'll be close. It'll be like, you know, one of those kind of functional limitations. But the other part of this is, what is Portland gaining from this?
I asked if he was just trolling, right?
Yeah, because this is a team that not only has Myers Leonard, but also traded Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and Steve Blake Mason Plumlee.
Good one. Yeah.
Yeah, not Marshall. Not Marshall, not Miles. Mason Plumlee. Yeah. And so they would have a third center who isn't, I would say none of those three are strong defensively.
I think that's definitely true.
Mason's the best of the three. He's okay. You'd give him, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, he's a little bit too, like, kind of hyperactive. I mean, maybe in a little better system. He's always kind of looked like a better shot blocker and rim protector than he actually is. But, you know, he has good physical tools. You know, I think he is 25, so not a lot of upside there. But, you know, I think he could certainly improve as well as he plays more. So, yeah. But no, I agree with you. I mean, but they're just sort of in asset accumulation mode at this point. But, yeah, I mean, it does kind of smack a little bit of, like, all right, you know, we're going to... I mean, it's funny, though, because, like, his agent, Max Ergel, doesn't have any other clients, so it's like a favor to him, you know, what Olshay is doing. So who knows? I mean, there's always kind of webs and back channels that could be used to explain, or conspiracy theories or whatever to explain this. Or maybe they just thought that we have this room, we're not going to use it on anything else. We see him as a guy who has like some modicum of upside. We want to convince our fans that we're trying. Whatever, fine.
And this is also just the issue of where the incentives are in the Portland franchise right now. Not just convince the fans, convince their owner that they know what they're doing. So you're at a standpoint where if I do nothing, I'm getting fired, or I'll throw this Hail Mary, it doesn't work, I'm getting fired. Or if it works out, and we see this all the time with teams that with a shaky GM who's kind of on the hot seat, kind of throwing good money after bad, and that Hail Mary to try to, you know, pull something out of, you know, in a mangle metaphors horribly here, but pull something out of the fire and save his job. And that, and you got to figure that there's maybe a little of that going on.
Yeah, and Zach Lowe reported that you know, there are a lot of people around the league who kind of wanted to see OKC hoisted by their own petard a little bit with this offer, so, and they're kind of glad it happened. I completely understand that philosophy too. All right, what's next here?
Okay. Well, we've gone on for 40 minutes, and LeBron James signed in the interim. LeBron signed the least surprising contract. He signed a 1+1, so that means 1 year and a player option. But what makes this compelling is that what had been reported was that he was kind of using that leverage for the purposes of Tristan Thompson, but he signed before Tristan did.
Yeah, I think the idea was, you know, there wasn't any movement on Thompson, so maybe the idea, you know, with them was that they kind of had to get James back, you know, into the fold. I'm talking with them being his representation, get James back into the fold so he can now kind of more officially work on that aspect of things. You know, I mean, there were the reports that they were close initially. You know, I think that, and then Draymond Green actually ended up using that report as a benchmark for his contract, which was a couple million above the reported 5-year, $80 million from Thompson. Turning out that that wasn't actually a real thing. And so now, you know, the beat goes on for Thompson. I mean, what do you guys think is a fair contract for Thompson?
This is a situation where it's literally only money. You know, it's a rare... You hear that tossed around, it's only the owner's money. This is an almost unique case where the opportunity costs are almost nil, because what else are they going to do either way? So it's basically just how much money can LeBron convince...
Yeah, well, 5 years from now, it could be an opportunity cost. You know, I mean, for this year, I agree with you, but, you know, 5 years is a long time. You know, he's 24, yeah. He's going to be 29 by the end of this contract. I mean, I think a lot... They're probably... My guess would be that they're struggling more over... the options aspect.
Yeah.
Trade kicker. Yeah, that's one thing we've seen a lot of, actually, is, you know, we haven't seen guys go for the 1+1, but this buyer's market from, you know, I guess it's a seller's market, it would be, right, from the player's standpoint.
Yes. Yeah.
But, like, it's being indicated by the fact that you're seeing a lot more guys getting trade kickers than you used to. You used to see that more often just in, like, restricted free agency. And same thing, a lot more player options or early termination options in the case of 5-year contracts as well. So that's that shows you then, you know, what a player's market it has been. But, yeah, Cleveland, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. I mean, so I'll ask you guys again, what's a fair deal for Tristan Thompson?
Based on this offseason, you got to say, I mean, something similar to the Robin Lopez deal you're talking fairness. I actually think Lopez is a better player, but, you know, given Thompson's age and upside and the fact...
I disagree with you. I think Tristan Thompson is a better player than Lopez.
Okay, I agree.
Because, like, just his versatility defensively and also just his offensive rebounding... And also, and his fit as well on
specific
that team
value.
It is so good, because he can really be effective and keep possessions alive. You know, has a unique way of keeping the help off of drivers because they're scared of leaving him with his offensive rebounding. And, you know, his ability to switch out on anyone who's not Steph Curry is pretty impressive. And he showed some really nice rim protection in those Bulls and Hawks series as well. So, that was always my big question about him was... You know, can he play a center defensively? And, you know, the Bulls didn't have any success posting him up either. Like, I was really impressed with him. I think he's, like, you know, a legit, like, starting center with a lot of versatility. He also actually has some ability to catch the ball in short areas and take a dribble and, you know, make hook shots as well.
Not trying to justify it or trying to anchor it off of a contract that we all disagree with, but wouldn't you rather give Tristan Thompson what Enes Kanter got than Enes Kanter?
Yeah, no, of course you would. I mean, and that's a good point too. I mean, maybe that's if I were Neil O'Shea, maybe I would have just gone for Tristan Thompson.
He can do that next.
Yeah.
They're not usually.
Yeah, no, that's
true. He can do that Monday morning. I think he should.
So OKC has until Sunday to match. You know, Sam Presti had some comments indicating that they probably would. I think we all expect them to. You know, that would be a pretty massive shocker if they don't. You know, especially again with Durant potentially becoming free. Quick housekeeping on LeBron. He signed a 1+1. He will almost certainly opt out of that again next year. The reason that he will be doing that is because the cap's going up. His contract for next year will start at about $30 million. He still would only be able to sign a four-year deal because they would have his early bird rights. And you can only sign a five-year deal with full bird rights after being on the team for three seasons, with some exceptions that are too complicated to get into. And so that'll be the story with LeBron. I mean, I would expect him next year to probably end up signing that four-year deal, though. And then he also would get into some over 36 rule implications with him as well. I think he'll be 31 at the time he signs that next year. So, and anyway, that's the story with him. What do we got next?
Going to a division rival, Paul George he's informed USA Basketball that he will not participate in minicamp. He's just going to lay low.
You worried about that all, Seth?
I from his standpoint, I can understand not really wanting to just, it's not exactly.
No, they moved the stanchions back now at Thomas and Mack. It's fine.
I can still understand. Let's just not. Yeah.
So then, also, as a part of the Pacers, though it's more the Lakers in this context, the Lakers got Roy Hibbert to waive most of his trade kicker, which was a pretty big coup for them.
Yeah, it was. I mean, and the way that they did that, Hibbert was making 15.5. He had that 15% trade kicker. So although Indiana would have paid it, he would have gone onto the Lakers' books at a little over 17. And you're only allowed to waive a trade kicker if it is technically required for to fit into the space that is left to make the salaries match. And since the Lakers were taking him into cap space, what they did was they signed Brandon Bass. He actually did not sign for the room exception. He signed for a little over $3 million a year. And then they also signed Lou Williams first, and that meant that they had less than the $17 million in space. So he then was able to waive his trade kicker, which I would have done as well as him, because it's just a much better situation to be in. I'm sure that agreement had already been consummated before they did the other signing. So it was a good by the Lakers to then they were able to preserve their room exception now by doing that to get Bass with cap space. They're able to pay him a little more, which was nice. And so now they still have that room exception and they have Hibbert. So good job of cap management by the Lakers. And I'll actually say I think they've done pretty well, since they got completely rejected.
Yeah, given the constraints that they had, I think they've done well, and that's
like those sorts of little moves of late have been things that the Lakers have kind of been blowing. So we should give them credit when they actually get it right.
Moving on to a team that has done a lot with a little, the Miami Heat got Amari Stoudemire and Gerald Green to both sign for the minimum, which are two great deals to me.
Yeah, what do you think, Seth?
In a vacuum, those are both really nice deals. That's such a weird team now. They're almost a fantasy team. Just wonder how any five of their players fit together on the court in a sensible way.
I love their starting five. I like their starting five a lot.
Yeah, they don't have enough shooting.
But other than that, you're right.
That's the biggest problem. I don't think they have enough shooting. And they also, other than Whiteside, and maybe I guess you could look at Deng too. Bosch, I guess, as well. He's slowing down and is going to have more offensive responsibilities, but, still can be a good defensive player when motivated. But, yeah, when you consider that they just, their big problem last year was they just didn't have NBA players off their bench, right? And they didn't have a backup shooting guard, like, on the whole roster, and Dwayne Wade was their starting shooting guard. So, when you consider that, having more depth guys, being able to give more rest to guys like Bosch, Wade, that's going to be huge. And Amari Stoudemire can still get buckets. Like, Gerald Green is a guy who won, multiple games for Phoenix over the last 2 years just by heating up. And, you can take him out if you need to. Having a guy, Green is a guy who you really have to stick to more than you do some other shooters, because he can jump over you if you're not, right there when he catches the ball. So, if you're think you're going to close out on him, he's going to jump too high for you to really be able to do that, especially if you're guarding him with a smaller player. So, yeah, those are both fantastic moves, and you have to wonder with some of the contracts that have gone out. Maybe they just wanted to play there. I totally understand that. Yeah. And there's a thought that they could re-sign. Stoudemire in particular, I'm sure, wants to play as a contender, but both of those guys should have gotten more than that. And I think, you know, Green is someone I could easily have offered $4 or $5 million on, you know, a 2-year deal if I'm a team with space.
But he could be rehabbing his value this year for not only the expanded cap, but, you know, he's going to get a role with this Heat team. So that might, if maybe it was, let's say, $2 or $3 million, I could definitely see taking the minimum with the Heat, considering he's probably going to be the Wade replacement. Wade's not going to play.
Well, he's pretty good. He's like 28 now. So, I mean, this is, if you're 27, 28, like, I think the whole rehab your value thing it might be a little overrated. I think this is the kind of the time to strike. But yeah, you know, maybe he has another great year and, you know, he ends up resigning.
Some team offers him a mid-level exception.
I mean, both of those guys are going to will have very small cap holds next year, which will be helpful. You know, if they would have to use cap space to re-sign them to more than the minimum again, but you know, I thought those are good moves. All right, what's next?
We'll do some big man ones. Cole Aldrich signed a 2-year deal with the Clippers, presumably for the minimum, second year player option. What's becoming the trendy?
I'm looking forward to Cole Aldrich being the, hey, how come Doc Rivers doesn't play that guy at all guy this year for the Clippers?
Yes, that's certainly the worry.
Not that he's so amazing.
No, but I do want to, you know, they've kind of lucked into a decent off season. I say lucked into it by the way the whole DeAndre thing went down. But one thing they have done, I feel like, better is making at least smarter bets with these last minimum where they're
totally.
They were kind of making kind of hopeless. That guy, like the Doc Rivers joke about,
yeah, Dante Jones. There's just no chance that, like, it's well established. He's 31, you know, Turkaloo, like, you know. What do you have against Dante Jones?
I've got nothing against Dante Jones. Nothing at all. Moving on. No, but the point is that, you know, these back end guys, you know, instead of whole guys who are hopelessly not going to be rotation players, like, or if they are, it's a bad sign, like Big Baby Davis, like, okay, Cole Aldridge maybe comes in, plays 10 minutes a game, doesn't kill you on defense, that's great. Wes Johnson comes in, does reasonable things as a backup four, doesn't kill you. And so those are just, they might not work out, but they are at least better gambles than kind of the...
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you on that. What's the next thing?
We talked about him previously. Kevin Garnett, we know the terms now. It's 2 years, $16 million. Seems like about what we expected.
Yeah, we were talking about kind of the 7 to 10 million range. You know, no opportunity cost really to them. They're capped out. They'll have a crap load of space next year. You know, keeping him around as a mentor, PR, you know, young team, fine.
Absolutely. Jordan Hill, Pacers. We don't know years. We don't know dollars, but we know they need big men.
What do you think it is, Danny? If you had to guess what it's going to be, what do you think it is?
2 years. $15.5 million, second year player option.
Player option, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, well, so last year he signed for 2 years, $9 million a season with a team option. I mean, I don't really like him very much. I'll tell you that. I mean, if you look at, would I rather, especially when you consider that they got Ellis, would I rather have Rodney Stuckey and Jordan Hill or Roy Hibbert for this year, especially with Hibbert expiring after next year, and now, you know, Hill, they might be committing to longer. Stuckey is 3 years. He's 29, and it's 3 years, $21 million. Yeah, like, why not just keep Hibbert around? Maybe they felt like they just need to change the vibe and that there's something interpersonal going on there. I mean, you think there kind of would have to be with the way that they, like, just eviscerated him in that, you know, exit interview press conference. But, yeah, I don't know. You agree with me, Seth?
Yeah, I would have said closer to like 210, 212 with a player option maybe.
Yeah.
For Hill. And I think it's fairly clear that the relationship with Hibbert was broken. And it's kind of been an odd thing, like, over the last maybe 18 months, you want to say, how kind of maybe more like 15 months, his reputation has just, I think, largely unfairly kind of tumbled.
Yeah.
But to me, like, I think, you know, he still has an elite skill. I would feel much better about them for this year if they still had him, because I think if they still had him, you could say, all right, they're going to be, like, you know, a top five defense again, assuming that George comes back. I don't know that you can say that about them. Now, to me, their problem, and you know, there's nothing against David West at all as a person, or even it, to me, it was always kind of the West and Hibbert together. If you were going to play small around Hibbert, I think that that, which they should have done more, they literally never did that at all. You know, in his stint with the team, they always had two bigs on the floor. Then you could have still had him protecting the rim, and you know, with George at the four more this year, I think you could still have maintained that great defense. Yeah, he's not that great at pick and roll, but you know, that's okay. I mean, they're not going to be some amazing offensive team this year. Anyway, I would have actually liked them a lot more if they had just signed Ellis and kept him and, you know, kind of filled in around there. So, I don't know. I thought that it was really that West-Hibbert combination, because West doesn't shoot any threes and, you know, is not really kind of a great, like, explosive, like, pick-and-roll player either. So, yeah.
We also saw more from George Hill last year offensively.
Right,
and I was
kind of
excited about how George Hill and Paul George playing together could pick up the offense a little bit. Maybe you stretch it a little bit more next to Hibbert. And I was like, oh, this could be an opportunity for kind of an evolutionary Pacers team. And then if it doesn't work, you can easily blow the whole thing up very, very easily. And it's not like they got assets for Hibbert. You know, they got, I think, an eventual second-round pick. But we can move on. For the second time in a week, a player had his qualifying offer rescinded and then immediately signed with another team. This time it was Mirza Teletovic. The Nets rescinded his qualifying offer and then he signed a 1-year, $5.5 million deal with the Phoenix Suns.
Rescinding the qualifying offer makes a lot more sense when you saw what they eventually did with D-Will now, because they just, now that they are under the tax, they are not going to go into that really for any reason. I thought that, you know, Teletovic on a 1-year, $5.5 million deal was excellent. They didn't want to risk then Teletovic like opting into his qualifying offer, which had been that $4 million. Phoenix, very good deal, I think. You know, $5 million for Teletovic, another guy who, like, why wouldn't the Pacers pay Teletovic instead of Jordan Hill, right? I mean, Jordan Hill, center in a power forward's body, slow, pretty miserable defender, you know, has never been a good player by any advanced metrics, basically, other than if you're just looking at points and rebounds, which are not particularly advanced at this stage of the game. So, yeah, I don't know. What do you guys think of that signing? Like, he was another one to me that I just didn't understand why he was languishing out there, you know, at age 29, good shooter, and kind of an underrated defender.
Part of it may be lingering health concerns.
Yeah, he did have the lung issue, yeah. But, I mean, you know, he was back playing by the end of the year.
That's
so
true. And then, and you know, if you're signing for a one-year deal, yeah.
Can you recall anyone who's had, like, a recurrence of that issue? I don't think I can.
No, it's just, but it's just like a viscerally kind of, situation.
Yeah. Well, viscerally is not like a good reason not to offer someone.
We're not offering good reasons, we're offering reasons.
Yeah, okay.
So,
fair enough.
But I think this is something you guys wanted to talk about. Like, and it's not one of those in a vacuum, but then you look at, like, the salary dumps Phoenix did, and then signed a player who's, now, maybe there's some value to them to splitting the Morris brothers up, and I think that's a reasonable argument to make. And so, basically, putting Teletovic in the Marcus slot, that works fine.
Yeah, he's probably a better defensive player than Marcus is, a little bit more of a pure four who can hold up, you know, smarter defender, I think. Maybe you could even say a little better shooter, though Marcus is a pretty darn good shooter.
Only a one-year commitment, and if you really like him, the non-bird would probably be enough to get him back.
Yeah, that's possible too. But I mean, you know, Marcus Morris is cost controlled for under $5 million a year for the next 4 years.
And he's descending, right?
He is. I think he descends into 2016, and then goes back up again.
Right.
Like the Suns did that with both Markieff and Marcus. I think their plan was to strike in 2016, but. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think, would you rather have, I guess Weems was the room exception, so they still have, you know, about $3 million left or so, $2 million left. Would you rather have had the guys they traded away, or would you rather have on their contracts, or Teletovic on this contract?
I mean, we're getting into kind of the more, again, like how you feel about the more
just in a pure basketball sense, because I mean, I don't think any of us are qualified or know enough about that situation to really opined with any effectiveness.
I mean, the Sonny Weems signing is just kind of bizarre.
I think that's actually it's going to be good.
You think so?
Yeah, like he's a guy who, you know, is athletic, can shoot the three. He's improved in Europe. you know, I mean, I haven't looked at exactly what his statistical translations are, but I think they're pretty decent. I mean, he's, I think when you look at the wings that were left on the market, I think he's, for that money, I think he's better than those guys, or at least has a chance to be better than those guys.
How old is he now? Is he...
He is 29.
Okay. That was kind of my biggest kind of thing about it. If he'd have been like 26 or something, maybe splitting hairs, I guess, but...
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I would... It's six of one, half a dozen of the other, actually. And you know what?
It's pretty close.
If that was part of their gamble to make a big swing out of Aldridge, and this is what they come up with to fill the room, all right, that's perfectly acceptable downside. So I think my kind of gut reaction is probably too harsh, and it's fine, and you know, and it's a fine consolation prize for a swing and missing.
And to be clear, I mean I wouldn't call it splitting hairs, but we're splitting something that's like, you know, three times the diameter of a hair or something. This stuff is important, but I'm not going to say it's going to change the fates of Detroit or Phoenix or anything.
We're splitting porcupine quills.
Yes, thank you. You're far more creative than I am, especially given another 15 seconds to think about it.
Before we get into other signings, a little piece of news. Rashawn Holmes of the Sixers, he went for a very ambitious block, nice block, and at the last day of the Utah Summer League, and broke his elbow. He's reportedly out for about 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah, I was actually there when he did that. That was a nasty block, and you could hear it. They gave us great seats. By the way, Jazz Summer League, a quick aside, amazing experience, something to go to. They had 13,000 Utah fans who were going nuts for the Jazz Summer League as that game went into overtime. Utah, always a wonderful experience to visit, like great food in the media room, like, someone called me from the organization saying, hey, you know, do you know where everything is? Like, have you been here before? Like, just first-class organization all the way. I was really impressed with that. But with that aside, yeah, Rashawn Holmes impressed as a second-round pick of the Sixers, just as a guy who can shoot standstill threes and shoots a set shot out on the perimeter and then can really explode off of 2 feet on the glass or trying to block shots. So just with those two skills, someone who I think would be a decent fit with either Noel or Okafor as a guy off the bench. So a shame to see him fracture his elbow, but you know, I would imagine he'll be on the team this year.
Yeah, I would certainly think so. We'll do some rapid fire signings. Caron Butler to the Kings.
Crickets. Anyone want to take this one?
Why is it? Do they really need two guys? Because I think everybody assumes they're going to have Andre Miller as their like kind of second, as their player coach, you know, assistant coach. Do they need two of those guys?
Well, I mean, is Caron Butler really just like that awesome of like a locker room influence guy? Like
that's kind of my question. I mean, he's a guy whose reputation as a player for the last several years has outstripped his contributions, and so. It's sort of the magical transformation of has been in the league for a while, therefore, and I don't think we know anything either way. But there's no, is there any special reason to suspect that he is a positive locker room guy?
He helped form that blanking wall.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's I don't think that really means much. Like he's not really like a good enough shooter. And all he can do now is shoot standstill threes, so you know. But he's shooting them at 34% or whatever. You know, I think he kind of showed that he was pretty much done in Milwaukee and Detroit these last couple of years. But you know, as a minimum guy, a veteran, fine.
Will Barton back to the Nuggets per Chris Haynes of Cleveland.com, 3 years, about $11 million.
What do you think of him, Seth?
He showed some things after he was a guy who maybe got a little lucky at the trade deadline because if he had been still on Portland, I mean, he probably wouldn't have got a chance to show that he was any more than kind of a bench celebration, flashy dressing guy. And he, you know, can he shoot well enough to actually stick in a rotation? We don't know. He's got some other athletic skills that you kind of
kind of like a Corey Brewer light.
Yeah,
with maybe like a little bit better of ball skills than Brewer,
and that's
but he's also, you know, four inches shorter than Brewer, which is important.
But that's an NBA player. Whether you know 3 years, $11 million might be smidge high on the years, I'd say. But you know,
he's young. What is he? 22, 23? Why not lock him up? I mean,
that's a gamble.
So that should reduce Denver's cap space. I think they're down to like about $8 million or so now. All right, what else?
Wayne Ellington to the Nets, very similar to, I believe it was the Thomas Robinson deal, where he got part of their, what was going to be the mini mid-level exception. Now, with what happened, they might actually be able to use the non-taxpayer mid-level. But so, 2 years, about $3 million with a second-year player option.
Seth, do you agree with my take that he's kind of like an underrated guy? Or do you disagree with that?
No, I think so. I think he's a professional shooter. And, you know, he's a professional shooter at a position where it's okay to have him on the floor, too. Like, it's not Steve Novak where you got to play him at the four and then he's disastrous defensively.
Yeah, I don't think he's like, I mean, he's not any great shakes. Like, he's, you know, a below average athlete for an NBA, too. But I don't think he's, like, horrible defensively.
No.
Not good, but not horrible. And he shoots 40% on threes.
Yeah, and he plays a role where he can not kill you on defense.
And he'll have a usefulness for this Nets team, too. I mean, they need guys like that.
Yeah, just to stand in the opposite corner so that the double team on Lopez comes a little slower.
Drew Gooden to the Wizards for, I think it's the first year is about $3.3 million, non-guaranteed second year.
Yeah, and the reason they have to have that non-guaranteed second year is because they used the early bird exception to re-sign him. He's basically been on the team 2 years. He signed partway through the middle of that first year, but he's been on a team for basically parts of two consecutive seasons. Then essentially you're allowed to get early bird rights, but you have to sign for at least 2 years, but only the first year has to be guaranteed.
Yeah, I think that's fine. You know, the Wizards didn't have a ton of flexibility. We talked about that with Jared Dudley, so they got back a player. They should be fine.
Yeah, I mean, especially because people like seem to think that Drew Gooden is a much better shooter than he actually is. Like that's where it comes from. Is just having to quote unquote guard him as a stretch four. That's why he was effective to some degree in the playoffs.
The Perelantich shooter, model.
Yeah, he's a little better than Perelantich at least. Yeah. But
Joel Freeland turned down about 3 years, $6 million from the Mavericks. They sadly got spurned by another center to go to Moscow.
I'm sad we already used that we had a deal joke because that seems like I remember reporting that he'd already agreed on a deal to go back to Europe, and then Dallas kind of came back after him, which would have been a small irony, but yeah.
Alonzo Gee and Luke Babbitt both signed with the Pelicans. It looks like they're both 2 year deals for the minimum. It's been reported that Alonzo got the second year as a player option. We don't know yet on Luke Babbitt.
G is just such a Pelican signing.
Yep.
Like he's, you know, just not really a ton of upside, you know, has been in the NBA, you know, and can play some defense, offensive liability, not really an NBA rotation player with any real possibility of becoming so on a good team.
Wouldn't you rather have Wayne Ellington?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like that's someone who I think could have really helped New Orleans, especially with presumably how they want to play with Gentry out there. Like this is another one. And I think they paid him above the minimum, right?
No, they gave him the minimum.
Oh, okay.
But he has a player option second year.
They paid someone above the minimum a little bit.
Oh, yeah, they did. I don't remember who it was.
Like, because they have now gone into, I think, their full mid-level. As opposed to just the main mid-level. Because Cunningham was at the main mid-level. And so what that does, of course, is it's going to hard cap them at the apron. And they still have to bring back Cole. I don't think it's going to cause them any issues. But, you know, it is something to consider.
He's going to have a rich restricted free agency market. Yeah. Ronnie Price to the Suns, 1 year at the minimum.
But, I mean, he actually was helpful on the Lakers because they literally had no one else who could play any perimeter defense on their team last year. And they actually started playing much better when he got more playing time, which is a sad state of affairs, perhaps. But, yeah, I mean, just locker room guy, third point guard.
No, and in contrast to Caron Butler, he is a guy who you do frequently, not in contrast, but where you don't either way about Butler. You hear a lot about Ronnie Price being a good locker room guy. So that's...
Yeah.
The Jazz, second offseason move. They signed Raul Neto for 2 years, $2.8 million.
Neto was the MVP of the 2013 Eurocamp that I was at. You know, a lot of times saying he was the MVP is sort of, they'll do that because they just want to, like, help guys' status as prospects so that more people will go there, basically. And not to say that was necessarily undeserved, but a guy who's, you know, sort of a pick-and-roll field guy, not particularly athletic, although he has improved his explosiveness a little bit, great at throwing alley-oops and pick-and-roll, He was actually, he got some experience playing for the Brazilian national team as their backup point guard behind Huertas in the World Cup last year. So another guy, I think they got him for 3 years for under $1 million a season. He was their second round pick in 2013, as I think you said. So you know, he'll be their third point guard. And then if they decide to move on from Trey Burke during the season, you know, he could maybe step in and play a backup role. Still pretty young. I think he's only about like 22, 23.
Spurs signed Jonathan Simmons, 2 years, first year's guaranteed, second year team option.
Where did he go to school, by the way? Do we know that?
Jonathan Simmons, I think he went to St. Louis University, I think.
No, I thought that was Willie Reed.
Oh, you're right. I'll look.
Okay, but anyway, yeah, Simmons is only noteworthy for me, and I only saw maybe like a game and a half of the Nets, but he kind of popped to me a little bit. Like, he was someone who was able to get to the basket and finish, look pretty good in the Orlando Summer League, and the Spurs apparently agreed, and this is what good organizations do, right? They weren't in the Orlando Summer League. They had someone there, and they immediately jumped on him and gave him a full year guaranteed at the rookie minimum. So that's good for the Spurs. I mean, you imagine he'll spend a lot of the year in Austin, but it's I think he's actually someone who we might potentially hear from again. I mean, I don't know much about him, as I said.
He went to Houston.
Ah.
Okay. Texas guy.
Yeah, so it's, but just, I mean, that's what you, so many guys that you watch in Summer League, you're just like, okay, you know, nothing about them should popped up, and he showed the ability to get to the basket, so, you know, maybe we'll see.
And he gets the standard, oh, the Spurs did it, it's probably okay bump, which,
No, I'm not giving him that.
Really talk about it. The other Spurs thing is they traded a second round pick for Raymond Cowell.
Yeah, that one you can talk about with that, the standard Spurs bump.
Yeah, and I think Kevin Pelton and I were talking about that. Is it lazy confirmation bias or solid Bayesian reasoning?
There's the secondary thing there that not only are the Spurs betting on him, but the Kings are trading him. And so you're like, oh. So it's like, okay, so you're getting a guy like out of a tire fire, and you're bringing him into a positive situation. So. I liked Ray McCallum a lot. He was a guy who I was at UCLA, and he was rumored to be heading there, but then he ended up playing for his dad in Detroit. I liked him a lot when he was that young. He has talent. He hasn't really gone as much as an NBA player, but I mean, it's a 1 year flyer. Again, it's like one of those things that they, why not?
Well, his greatest NBA moment so far has been part of getting lit up by Klay Thompson for 37 and a quarter. He had his really unsuccessful stints on him. Yeah, that was one of Ty Corbin's greatest coaching highlights was, well, Klay Thompson is heating up with Ben McLemore on him a little bit. Well, we better go to Stauskas. and then Ray McCallum. Ray McCallum, your turn.
So then Willie Reed signed 1 year deal with the Nets. He had been on Miami's Orlando Summer League team, another guy who I thought had popped a little bit.
Yeah, I didn't see as much of him, but yeah, that's another one, and it does show like somewhat of the transits, these summer league rosters, right? You identify someone, get them on your summer league team. There's absolutely nothing preventing them from just immediately signing a contract with someone else. I mean, maybe if you have a good relationship with the agent, you can say, hey, we're to give him this platform. You know, we're gonna try and feature this guy a little bit on our summer league team, and you know, in exchange, give us the first crack at him. Maybe they had the first crack at him to sign him and did not take it. But, yeah, I mean, and the Nets, I do admire what they have done as far as just trying to get some athletic guys, some guys who could be low-cost talent that might potentially be good. I mean, they are, you know, they bought those picks with Markel Braun and Corey Jefferson in the end of the second round last year. Those guys have shown a little bit, at least. So that's what you have to do when, you know, they are so limited with their own draft picks going forward, to try and take a few lottery tickets on young athletic guys and, you know, see if they work out.
And you talked about first crack, and that ties in with the next guy, Robert Upshaw. Within, it seemed like minutes of the start of his Rookie of the Year campaign, he signed a 2-year deal with the Lakers, unguaranteed second year, partially guaranteed first year.
Yeah, we saw him yesterday. What did you guys think?
He's very large, very raw. Fouls a lot, although it's summer league, so a lot of people foul a lot.
Not nearly as much as Tarik Black.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, it's given his kind of profile and physical presence. I mean, and where the Lakers are, it's a aside from maybe kind of the red flags, it's almost surprising that, no one took a gamble on him in, the draft to begin with. So, you know, he's a draftable talent that you're getting for free, so it's... Sure.
And with a non-guaranteed second year, you have at least a little bit of leverage on him. I mean, he obviously could get the guarantee, but you say, hey, you know, if you're going to do that, and, you know, if you get cut from the Lakers, that would be a black mark kind of in the NBA. Upshaw's talent, I mean, it was something I saw when he played at Washington. He has a lot of physical ability. He has solid defensive instincts, and just, he's a big dude. And he made some nice defensive plays yesterday. So, I mean, I said that even with his red flags, I would have considered taking him late in the first round. So,
yeah,
I have a strong opinion on
him. He's got, like, an okay turnaround jumper in the post. Not a guy who's going to, like, catch the ball and make any kind of a play in space, even if it's just, you know, catching a pick and roll. Like, anything other than just, like, dunking it right at the rim. Probably not something that he can do. But, yeah, I mean, he's a very, very intimidating shot blocker. All right, so let's finish this up because we got to get to the games today. Here's who, oh yeah, and Lance Thomas, back to the Knicks, one for $1.6 million, whatever. So who's left as far as the bigs? Basically no starter quality bigs left. Josh Smith, Psycho T, Tyler Hansbrough, who at least, you know, has actually statistically been pretty decent for Toronto the last couple of years. And we haven't had him on this list. We probably should have. And do you think he can help the team?
I want to back up. You think Josh Smith isn't a starting quality player in the NBA anymore? He's probably not an above-average starter anymore, but I think he's certainly a higher-end rotation player, I would think. He showed that in Houston.
Yeah, okay. When I think of starter quality, I sort of think more of, like, someone that I would pay starter money to.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like, $10 million a year at this point in this environment. I would not do that for him. So
I would give him six.
Yeah. Okay.
If someone,
and what is he? 30.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he still is someone who I think, you know, has declined a lot due to his lost athleticism and will continue to do so. I mean, yeah, like six for 1 year. Yeah. I mean,
if someone signed him to two years, like $13 million, I wouldn't bat an eye.
And by someone, you mean Sacramento?
I would bat an eye at that.
Sadly, they don't have any money left. Yeah. Jarrell Arthur, still a guy who can shoot. I think you can at least look at him as someone who might be able to do better with his three-point range, stretch four off the bench, good feet, can switch pick and rolls pretty well defensively. Kevin Serafin.
Yeah, I like Serafin. And like with Jarrell Arthur, I keep thinking about him with Pacers. I think that'd be a nice fit.
And then you're getting down to Andrea Bargnani.
We're not talking about him.
Big Baby, Perkins, those type of guys. Wings looking pretty darn thin. You got JR out there still. KJ McDaniels. I mean, that actually might be the next direction I'd go if I'm Portland.
That's exactly what I was thinking. And Olshede becomes my favorite GM if all of a sudden he just, like, cycles through handing out restricted free agent offers and, like... Because I've just...
Yeah, why not do that?
How are you guys not talking about Sam Hinkie putting an offer on McDaniels?
That one...
Well, because it's completely illogical. That was probably why, actually. I just thought of that, and I was like, oh, yeah, wait. No, they traded him for the exact reason that they didn't want to pay this contract.
But what if he gets below market value? I mean, what if it thins out?
Yeah, no, I guess that's true. At the time he was traded, you probably would have thought that he would get more of a contract than he did. Then he got that wrist injury, and he basically, you know, never played at all for the Rockets. So, yeah,
like if they sign Josh Smith if they sign him to a deal that cuts into their ability to get KJ, I think the Sixers would be a logical place to strike. So would Portland. I mean, they're both fine.
It would be ironic if, like, the first non-minimum free agent deal Hinkie did was for KJ McDaniels, who he dumped to not. That would be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think if you do plan to actually do that, you just wait around until they just use more of their space, and then, you know, once they are limited in matching, you come in with, you know, like $2 more than, like, what they can actually manage. All right, so I'm going to throw a few more list of names at you here, Seth. You know, we've been talking about these people. I want to get your opinion. Marcus Thornton, John Jenkins, Darrell Wright, Jason Richardson, Alexi Shved. Who do you like most of those group? Can any of those guys help a good team in the rotation?
Darrell Wright seems like the most likely.
Thinking like stretch four off the bench.
Yeah, stretch four. Maybe. I mean, John Jenkins has not ever really gotten much of a chance, and there's probably a reason for that.
He's terrible on defense, just absolutely terrible, and also just below average physically for an NBA two. But yeah, I mean, he can stroke it.
I mean, Marcus Thornton, kind of a similar, you know, professional chucker, maybe not good enough as a chucker to warrant
any at one point in his career he actually is kind of, you know, he's not that old. I think he was only like 27. Like, he kind of just dropped off the map a little bit in a weird way from when, you know, I mean, when Sacramento signed him to that contract, which is basically like 5 years, $40 million, that didn't strike me as like a terrible deal at the time. You know, he was having some pretty good scoring nights, you know, and I thought he could be a decent third guard for that kind of money, but you know, he just hasn't been able to really produce the way he had earlier in his career for whatever reason.
His one skill is scoring, and he just hasn't been able to do that quite well enough to justify much playing time as kind of a one-dimensional chucker.
Shved, a no-hoper for you?
He
actually had like a pretty good like PER last year. Not that I'm not going to lie and say I watched a ton of him. And he also, you know, is not exactly an Adonis from a body standpoint. We'll put it that way. Like, not someone who I think has been like a weight room warrior by any means, which, you know, doesn't necessarily speak that well to the type of work he's been putting in.
He's very wild as a player. And again, when you're
he has had some pretty solid, ridiculous
highlights. And when you're kind of that bottom end guy, that's you're probably looking for a little more solidity than that.
Okay, point guard market's pretty miserable. We don't need to talk about these guys. Jameer Nelson, by far the best guy out there as a backup point guard option. He's someone I think could be a totally fine backup point guard for a good team. Played well in Dallas last year. Did okay even when he moved on to Denver. So it's kind of a surprise that some of these teams, you know, the Bulls being among them, like, didn't look at him as opposed to, you know, some of the options that they've brought back. All right, so here's where everyone is now in terms of space. Really starting to get down to it a little bit here. Atlanta has the room exception. Brooklyn, now that they are actually under the apron, theoretically could use their full mid-level exception. They have $2.2 million of that left, but they will not be doing that because they're going to stay below the tax. Boston has about $6 million possibly, since they haven't done the Lee trade yet, that they could use before using that, but time is running short there. You know, they haven't signed Amir Johnson yet either, I don't think. They must have. Chicago, it was a small note. It was actually reported that Aaron Brooks did not get the minimum. He got $2 million for 1 year per Casey Johnson, which, so you can't really point anymore to the Bulls kind of cheaping out on that mid-level, but I think you can talk about them misallocating that resource.
Like you said, you'd rather have Jameer Nelson in that spot.
Yeah, I would rather have Jameer Nelson. I think there's
Jeremy Lin.
Yeah, Jeremy Lin is another guy who went for that same amount of money. I mean, I think the Bulls don't want to encumber 2016 too badly, but for $2 million, you know, it's not the end of the world. Yeah, I would much rather have Jeremy Lin as my bench point guard. And the Bulls really, to me, I think, like, Brooks and Kirk Heinrich and Etuan Moore is one of the worst backup point guard situations in the league. Brooks was great in the first half of the year, but I think everyone realized that was unsustainable, and that, in fact, proved to be the case. And you know, it might be important to have a backup point guard when Derrick Rose, who should be playing 31 minutes a game during the regular season and, you know, might miss a few games, is your starting point.
Should miss a few games, I would say.
Yeah.
Can we make an agreement, though, that Brooklyn has the worst backup point guard situation in the league now?
Yeah, I mean, but I would say the Bulls might have the worst situation of,
because,
like,
they actually matter.
Any team that really is, like, trying to be good.
Yeah.
If I'm missing someone on Twitter, please let me know. Cleveland, $1.4 million left of the mid-level. Oh, and this is something that we do actually need to talk about in some depth. They still have the Haywood contract left. Not really very many options to trade for it. The time is running short now. He becomes guaranteed on August 1st. They have to trade him before that so that the other team can waive him. Who do we see as a potential option to trade that to?
That's an excellent question. Looking at me, you don't know how much of a fit he makes with them given their roster, but a guy who it seems like is an out there guy who could, you know, give solid minutes to decent teams, Jason Thompson, he doesn't make a lot of sense for Cleveland, I don't think.
Yeah, they're pretty much tapped out on bigs, and I think most of the options that show up are bigs. I mean, there's been talk of maybe Jamal Crawford. I'm not sure how much that helps the Clippers. I mean, maybe you could then Crawford, I think, could help Cleveland a little bit, not a ton.
But if you're going for Crawford, why don't you just re-sign J.R. Smith? Is the question.
Well, I think they would do both. I think. Yeah. I mean, they do need. They need to re-sign J.R. Smith.
Yeah, they do.
Like,
Another option on the, there are two other things that I want to talk about. One
Wilson
is
Chandler, maybe
the Wilson Chandler, the possibility that they could go back to LeBron's former teammates and get Birdman and Chalmers just to add overall depth. I think if they could have Chalmers as a guard, that'd be a nice fit. And the other thing, which I think is going to be the end game here, not that I support it, I think if they can get a guy like Wilson Chandler, that'd be great, is trading Haywood to a team with cap space to generate a trade exception that they can use later.
Yeah, no, I think that'll be it. It's not as useful because, you know, now you'd be limited to just the amount of that plus $100,000 in the trade exception, assuming you're not taking back any salary. They might have to throw in a little bit of an asset to do that, you know, probably some bad second-round pick or something.
But that team's suffering no opportunity cost because they can just cut Haywood that next second.
Yeah, but I mean, teams don't just do teams a favor for no reason. Like,
yeah,
you have to throw in something. I mean, that's... Actually, I was talking about this with Pelton when we were in Utah. Like, the league, and not that it would necessarily come into play here, the league kind of needs, like, a 1.55th-round pick. Like, to, like, facilitate some of these trades. I mean, obviously, that's completely impossible. But, like, in so many of these trades that you think about, like, what would be the right return for this person, a first-round pick is too much, and a second-round pick is too little.
Or they need to add a third round to the draft so you can trade a second and a third-round pick.
Oh, God, that is not something that needs to be done. But, like, I mean, it's not... Obviously, it's totally unrealistic, but it's kind of interesting that, like, figuring out what an adequate return for some of these can be, like how you can normalize the value for some of these smaller transactions.
Option to swap second rounders seems like a possibility.
Yeah.
But that's when you're talking about a team like the Cavs, because the Cavs are good.
That's true.
Yeah.
Or option to swap a second round. No, that's a bad... That would be terrible.
Yeah, I mean, so if you were Cleveland, would you give up a future first rounder to get Wilson Chandler with that Haywood... with that Haywood contract?
To get Wilson Chandler?
From the Nets, under contract for about $7.5 million this year, a free agent at the end of the year. You can they'd have his bird rights, they could re-sign him.
Ooh. I like Wilson Chandler, but I don't know that I would.
I don't know, maybe it's more something like a future first for a future second, and Wilson Chandler might make, you know, a shortly coming up future second, so it's kind of a pick you think is going to be in like the mid-high 30s. That, I mean, balancing values, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they owe a lot of second rounders already. They gave up 2 second rounders to dump Keith Bogans on the Celtics 2016 and 2017. You know, that's not fantastic there. And then they also owe the big commitment they have is they owe a 2016 first rounder now to the Phoenix Suns. That also was traded to Boston in the Tyler Zeller move to basically get Boston to take Tyler Zeller. That's when they were clearing space for LeBron. Now if Phoenix has it, they got traded for Isaiah Thomas. It's top 10 protected through 2018, unprotected in 2019. So that will really complicate their efforts.
Yeah.
To trade future first rounders. I mean, basically, when you look at the guys that they have in their contract now, it's hard to... So that'll probably just get conveyed in 2016, actually, if it's
right.
Like 10 protected. So, yeah. So they can trade 2018 and beyond, and teams would, you know, 2018 isn't that far away now. Like, teams might be willing to do that.
Yeah, no, and, well, they traded conveying 2 years after, which is effectively 2018, but that was...
Yeah. And it's also interesting, too, once you get past 2017, you don't know, like, the rookie scale could increase a little bit more to where it's not, they aren't quite as ridiculously valuable as they will be for these next couple of years. Okay, yeah, let's try and scroll through some more of the highlights here. How long have we been going on for now, Danny? This has been ridiculous.
We're an hour and a half. We've done that before.
Ah, yeah, okay. That's fine. I mean, and you know, there have been so many...
It's lawn mowing time, people.
Yeah.
So we were Cleveland. So Charlotte, if assuming Lynn gets the biennial exception,
yeah.
They still have
to wrap up on Haywood though, I think probably what happens is they do that trade exception thing though, and then they can just take someone into that space. They'll have to give up assets to do it, but I think there just aren't that many great options that are really going to help them. And they'll have an idea. They'll get some injuries. I think they'll keep that around until the trade deadline. That to me is the optimum. And then teams will be out of contention. There'll be guys with expiring 2016 contracts. I think it'll be a lot easier to get something that makes sense at that point with the trade exception.
And they could also, by this point, they could also roll it over to this time next year. If they wasn't anything on the market, then they could use it early in the summer of 2016. There are going to be some teams that are looking to dump guys to sign other guys.
Yeah, no, you make a great point there. Dallas, I think, is down to about $10 million after they took Pachulia and Darren Williams. They had $20 million. Both those guys were about $5 million each. Denver made a little bit less than $10 million in space now, maybe down to about eight or seven with the Barton signing. The Warriors have $900,000 left of their mini-mid level. They could use that to sign someone to a three-year deal. I would imagine that maybe Michael Frazier, who's on their summer league team and is a really good shooter, someone that they might try and develop, would be a good candidate for that. Houston has their full MLE left, I think, right? And correct me if I'm missing any of these things. Indiana has $10 million minus whatever they're going to pay Jordan Hill, so maybe they'll probably be down to about like $3, $4 million with what we're speculating on him. Clippers have minimums left. Lakers have the room exception. Memphis is pretty much done except for minimums. Miami has the mini-mid level, but I don't think they're going to use it at this point unless they're able to move on from Chalmers and Birdman. Because of the luxury tax concerns. Milwaukee, what are they at? Like, are they up to $10 million now since they dumped Pachulia as well?
They should be.
Yeah. So, good luck finding a use of that. But
Josh Smith?
Yeah.
Oh, God!
New Orleans, depending on what it was with G... It was Babbitt that they actually broke into their... He was the one who got more than minutes. So New Orleans has a little bit of their MLE left. They also have their BAE left. Knicks have the room exception. Oklahoma City has their mini mid-level that they're not going to use due to tax concerns. Orlando I have down to about $8 million after signing Jason Smith. I was going to say this, actually. Some teams should try and trade for Mo Harkless now. He's not going to get any minutes at all. He'd be a good kind of second draft candidate. Especially as a wing guy who's pretty athletic, can kind of swing between the three and the four, maybe someone who could switch, pick and rolls also. He would be someone that I might look at.
That would be, that's a possible, that's you're describing a guy that Cleveland could use, actually. I mean, it's a much bigger chunk than the Haywood contract, but you throw a second and say, give us Mo Harkless, and
And for a team like Cleveland that's going to need kind of more cheap young talent.
Yeah.
I mean, he's already finished his third year, but he was really young when he was drafted after, I think, his freshman year. So, you'd have to re-sign him at this point. I mean, he's not going to get extended, I would assume, since, he'll be eligible for that, and then his rookie contract expires after next year. But, yeah, that's a guy, I think, if you're an enterprising team, that you should try and get. Maybe even if you're a good team, to try and take some flyers on, like, low-cost athletic guys to, like, get an injection of talent, which you might not be able to get through other means. Philly, still in the $20 million or so range. They could get there, at least, with their non-guarantees, probably more like $15 million, if they keep all those guys. Phoenix is down to about $2-3 million or so in space. I would imagine seeing them just going into the year now with that space, unless they find anyone great. Portland has about... $14 million left. When Cantor gets matched, they'll be back to $30 million. Spurs are down to minimums. Zach is down to minimums. Toronto might be able to cobble together like a million or two in room. Utah looks to be... Word is that they're keeping Trevor Booker, which they should. His guaranteed age July 15th. They've got about $7 million. And Washington has about $1.4 million left of their MLE. And that is about it. We are done. Anything you guys are really looking forward to in summer league while we're here as a way to close?
Okafor. I want to see him in person. I'm very excited. We didn't talk really about what we saw yesterday. I love Towns' passing. I thought that was good, and I'm excited to see the juxtaposition with Jahlil.
What are you, Seth?
I want to see, we watched a quarter of Denver yesterday, and I kind of lost my mind over Moutier in about 2 minutes. So I kind of want to watch more of him just to kind of calibrate and make sure I'm not, you know, going overboard, which is, you know, since I, that's kind of my mantra, is not to put too much in, but I was very impressed with him in like the 10 minutes we saw.
Yeah, I agree with you. In that short amount of time, his vision was quite good. Yeah, so anyway, I'm sure we'll have a lot more at some point. Maybe we can record again tomorrow and we can talk a little bit more about some of the guys we're seeing in Summer League, and you know, maybe we'll keep it a little shorter that time. So, all right, I think that's going to be about it. Follow Seth on Twitter. It's Seth Partnow, P-A-R-T-N-O-W. You got anything to plug at all writing-wise, Seth?
Not much. I think I'm gonna write up the hustle stats that they've got going on at Summer League this year. I think it's interesting. I think they're problematic, but trying to find out exactly if it's something they're testing out to do during the season, or if it's just something they're doing for giggles at Summer League.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about that more at some point. What about you, Dan? Anything to plug at all?
I'm doing stuff. I wrote a piece explaining the financial part of the David Lee trade. I'm going to be doing some more for the Sporting News, and hopefully, assuming we watch more Kevon Looney, I'll be able to actually write him up.
Yeah, awesome. All right, well, thanks everyone for listening. We'll probably be back, hopefully at some point before Summer League ends, with some more thoughts on guys. But until then, I'm Nate Duncan for Seth Partnow and Danny LaRue. This has been the Dunkdown Basketball Podcast. Talk to y'all later.